Thank you. Very appropriate. It is Psalm 3 we're going to turn to, as Ed has been explaining. This is the prayer book of the church. And in this book, there are a very wide variety of poetic expressions, which teach us, as someone has said, to pray as we are, not as we ought. Prayer is like day-to-day conversation. It takes a wide variety of forms. Sometimes we're just saying thank you. Sometimes we're just listening. Sometimes we're complaining a little bit. Sometimes we're praising. Then we're asking for forgiveness. Sometimes we need a favor. Sometimes we just speak our mind. Sometimes we just are sad. And other times we're expressing joy. All of that is involved in our praying life, the Psalms teach us, as it is in our daily conversation. And Psalm 3, the first one, by the way, in the Psalter with the title, the Psalm of David, and with an explanation, when he fled from his son Absalom. So it's a foxhole kind of prayer from a beleaguered king who's seeking solace in his God. And before we get to the psalm, you may want to turn first in your hymn books, if you want to read the story as I'm going to, 2 Samuel 15. But here's the context. David's son, Absalom, has been working hard behind the scenes, Scripture tells us, for 4 years. He's been, as people come into the city, he would kind of, it says, he'd reach down, he would embrace them, and he would listen to their complaints, and he would explain to them that if he were the king, they would be treated much more fairly, and there would be sunnier days. Well, he decides that at some point it's time. He's calculated it. So he's gathered his forces and he's making a run for the throne. And we pick up the story, 2 Samuel 15, verse 13. A messenger came and told David, "The hearts of the people of Israel are with Absalom." And David said to all his officials who were with him in Jerusalem, "Come, we must flee, or none of us will escape from Absalom. We must leave immediately, or he will move quickly to overtake us and bring ruin on us and put the city to the sword." The king's officials answered him, "Your servants are ready to do whatever the Lord the king chooses." The king set out with the entire household following him. But he left 10 concubines to take care of the palace. So the king set out with all the people following him, and they halted at the edge of the city. All his men marched past him, along with all the Kerethites and Pelethites and all the 600 Gittites who had accompanied him from Gath, marched before the king. And then the verse 30, "But David continued up the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went. His head was covered, and he was barefoot. All the people with him covered their heads too, and were weeping as they went out." And then over to 2 Samuel 16, verse 5. As King David approached Bahurim, a man from the same clan as Saul's family came out from there. His name was Shimei, son of Gera. and he cursed as he came out. He pelted David and all the king's officials with stones, though all the troops and the special guard were on David's right and left. As he cursed, Shimei said, "Get out! Get out, you murderer, you scoundrel! The Lord has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. The Lord has given the kingdom into the hands of your son Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a murderer." Then Abishai, son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head." But the king said, "What does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he's cursing because the Lord said to him, 'Curse David,' who can ask, 'Why do you do this?'" David then said to Abishai and all his officials, "My son, my own flesh and blood, is trying to kill me. How much more than this Benjamite? Leave him alone. Let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look upon my misery and restore to me his covenant blessing instead of his curse today." So David and his men continued along the road, while Shimei was going along the hillside opposite him, cursing as he went and throwing stones at him and showering him with dirt. The king and all the people with him arrived at their destination exhausted. And there he refreshed himself. And we didn't read it, but there was sent along with him some bread and fruit and some wine. And we will know that he had a good night of sleep. And that's where Psalm 3 gets inspired. It expresses what's happening in David's soul. And it's how he refreshes himself. And may this psalm refresh us. Here it is, his poem. "Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, 'God will not deliver him.' But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. I call out to the Lord, and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people." Well, brothers and sisters, here's a sample of what prayer can be. David shows us really how his relationship with God got formed by simply opening up to God with what it was that was stirring in his heart. To appreciate the psalm, keep in mind, as Ed's been explaining in the last few weeks, that Psalm 1 and 2 have been the gateway poems, helping us walk into the Psalter, beginning with that Psalm 1 that says, "Blessed is the one who learns how to meditate on and do the will of the Lord." And then Psalm 2 explains that there are nations that are actually conspiring against the king. God's going to deal with them through his king. But then it too ends with blessings on all those who will take refuge in God. Well, here in Psalm 3, here's David one who takes refuge in God, but also someone who's conspiring against the king. Lord, says David, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying, well, not very nice things, as we heard in Shimei. He's vastly outnumbered as this tide of disloyalty has become a tsunami that's forcing him to leave the city. And yet we should note that being outnumbered is not what's troubling him most. What does he say in verse 6? I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. David knows from experience that he can be in a minority and God grant the victory. So what's his greatest concern? That his next of kin, his son, is going against him and exposing to the whole country that things aren't good in the palace? I mean, it's kind of humbling to have your dysfunctional family matters become a public affair. But there's something deeper than that, and that's not to trivialize that, you know, David's deeply bothered by what Absalom is doing. He is. He loves Absalom. Later on, when he dies, Absalom does, God, as it were, deals with him. Absalom is in tears until finally people have to come and console him. He's not against Absalom's against him. So he's not his deepest problem. Here's what's most troubling to David, is that people are saying there's no help for him in God. God will not deliver him. That's what's troubling him the most. His deepest pain comes from this widespread rumor that his God is helpless, not able to save. I think he would have responded if the media reports had been that, you know, his term is done, he's no longer really a fit to be a king, and it's time to, as it were, vote him out of office. I think he could have accepted that. But here we see why David has a heart after God's own heart, because what's cutting him to the core is that God's people are saying that his God is useless. And that's why David needs to go. You know, I think it's kind of a fact of life that all conflict is religious, personal or political. Deeply religious, it reveals our spirit and in whom we trust. People do not go on the attack, and they wouldn't have here too, if they didn't think they had some power or principality or sufficient strength to win, pull off a victory. And Shimei just represents the change of attitude in the country as he mocks the king. He knows the forces are on his side. And while Absalom is mainly to blame, David knows that somehow Shimei has a right to be there. He's been a man of blood. He's let military power get the best of him at times. He plotted the death of Uriah to cover up his adultery. And David remembers what Nathan said to him, to quote, out of your own household I'm going to bring calamity upon you. Before your very eyes I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you. That's why David didn't ask his servant to go take care of Shimei. He's accepting the discipline of the Lord. And what hurt most was that Shimei and Israel were cursing God in part on account of him, what he had done. Truth is, no one ever sins alone. And his sin has brought shame on the name of his God. And David has in that way contributed to this lack of faith and resulting blasphemy of thousands. And it troubles him that God is now viewed as a weakling in Israel, someone not worthy of trust, because his deepest part of his heart, in spite of what he's done, and it's good to go to the deepest part of our heart, as David so quickly on often did, is that he wants people to know the Lord. It was the driving mission of his life that Israel and the neighboring countries would lift up the name of God. It's to be our desire as well. We may apply this little part of the passage. We're anointed in Christ to be kings and to, in that sense, rule in a good way on this earth, and in such a way that people come to a saving knowledge of who God is as he's revealed himself so clearly to us in Jesus. And what's to hurt us is not that people are saying things against us, but at what's happening in their hearts, that they don't see who Christ is. That's to hurt us more than the fact that the church's name is being muddied. What's to hurt is that often on account of us, people are wanting to have nothing to do with God. In our secular culture, many are saying that the God of Christians is not worthy of trust, that he really cannot deliver us or our world from our troubles. And sometimes it's hard not to be defensive against those who throw stones. And sometimes I have wondered and do wonder about the fallout of my own shortcomings as a parent or as a pastor. And whether there aren't those people out there who want nothing to do with Christ because of my own lack or poor testimony. And whenever that happens, may we have David's heart in prayer that the Lord's name would be hallowed on earth the way it is in heaven. The fact that David had to vacate his post, again, that's not the biggest deal, but that God is seen to be have left Israel and that they don't, that's what troubles him. So he writes this poem to let the people know that from his perspective, in that miserable spot, his God has not changed, and he's still going to find his security in that God. Verse 3, "But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high." John Calvin, the Reformer, said in this verse, "Even though this whole world should with one voice drive us to despair, rather than listen to it, we ought to give ear to God alone and cherish the thought of our salvation, which he has promised." You know, when trouble comes, there's a huge temptation to let it dominate. Sometimes the opposition, if we want to call that, can grow to such a large proportion that, as we say, it's driving me crazy. And that's really not the worst. It's driving us from Christ. It's ripping hope from our soul. That's what happened to Israel. When the 12, on the way to the promised land, they sent out these, you know, representative of the 12 tribes. They went into the land, they scouted it out, and they came back and said, oh, they are stronger, and they're taller, and their cities, they have these really high walls that go up to the skies. And the people's hearts melted in fear, and they didn't want to take another step in the direction of the promised land. Sometimes we look around and we see the stature of those who disregard Christianity and the church can take the will out of us to want to take another step of faith and question the promise of Christ that we have life forever in Him. The hypnotic power of evil and the temptation to give in can only be broken when we turn our eyes upon the Lord, who's able to help us and grant victory. It's David's experience. To be sure, he was tempted, discouraged, saw the potential defeat. But from the trenches, he can testify that his God, our God, can be trusted. He's up to his neck, you might say, in trouble. You know, barefoot, head covered in shame. What's he say? God, you're my glory. The one who lifts my head high. He may be down, but David's not out. He's not defined by where he is. It's God who gives him glory. Or as Paul would say, and we with him, it's Christ in us who is our hope of glory. And so when we are tested, we are to turn to the God who cares for us. Opposition will be a reality. But our greater reality and security is to be in our God. Why, with David, we're to cry out to the Lord, who, as he says, answers from that holy mountain, the one he just walked down from, but the one where the Ark of the Covenant, which represents God's powerful presence, is still there. And by the way, that's the mountain on which Jesus, with his head, you might say, in shame, walked up, to take your and my shortcomings and have them all nailed to that cross. And that's why we too can cry out to God, who answers on behalf of what happened on that holy mountain. And as David experienced, when in the midst of that he can cast his concerns and troubles, it even helps him deal with insomnia. I lie down and sleep, I wake again, because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Do you remember they were singing of David early in his career? Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. He remembers what God has done. And in his various battles, he's learned to share the struggles with his Father in heaven and say, God, you're going to have to deal with this one. And he never moved without him. And that's how peace of mind and even sleep could come to a man like him in his condition. James says, is any afflicted? Let them pray. Isaiah said, "The Lord keeps those in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on Him." We were reflecting how we learned this prayer as a child. "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." It's really simple. And as a kid, if you die, you go to be with Jesus. Life has gotten complicated. And sometimes we don't see that as easily. Have troubles blinded you to who Christ is and how powerful God is? Are you being tempted to conclude that, you know, I don't know if God can do much about what I'm facing? Or can we say with David and pray with him as he does in verse 7, "Arise, O Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike my enemies on the jaw and break the teeth of the wicked." Okay, that doesn't sound very nice. But we all think like that. I do, and I really think all of us do. We meet somebody in life who, at some point, we would like to take them out, or we wouldn't mind if somebody else took them out. These words hail back to Psalm 2. We're almost done. Remember in Psalm 2, it says, those who conspire against God, God's going to deal with them. It says it's going to break them with a rod of iron and dash them to pieces like pottery. I don't know how God's going to deal with the incredibly wicked people that in our day and this past week are committing terrible atrocities against humanity. And I don't think David knew how God was going to deal with his enemies either. But he knew that he would. And this much I know is that when Jesus was standing before some incredibly sly, slippery, evil people, he took it on the chin, literally. They didn't break his teeth, but they sought to do to him what Psalm 2 says God's going to do to the enemies, and they crucified him. And he took it. And so David's prayer, and it's to be ours as well, is that God, ultimately he's saying, would you please silence these enemies against you, deal with them, however you deal with them. But this much I know, and that's his conclusion, that from the Lord comes deliverance. And may your blessing be on your people.